Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from the golden age of radio. Mark Livonier, your host for an hour of mystery. Later on, it's Boston Blackie from 1945. But first, Casey Crime Photographer with an episode called The Hot New Year's Party. Heard on CBS on the 1st of January, 1948.
The Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation brings you Crime Photographer. Happy New Year, Casey. Happy New Year, Ethelbert.
Same to you, Marvin.
Say, you know this 1948 is going to be a great year.
Why so?
Well, don't you know? It's leap year.
And just what can leap year mean to you?
Why, I'm surprised at you, Ethelbert. Don't you know that that means an extra Thursday?
So what?
So what? That extra Thursday gives me an extra chance to say that Anchor Hawking is the most famous name in glass. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tony Marvin. Every week at this time, the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation of Lancaster, Ohio, and its more than 10,000 employees bring you another adventure of Casey, crime photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Written by Alonzo Dean Cole, our adventure for tonight, Hot New Year's Party. Half past nine on the morning of New Year's Day. And to some people, that hour on that day can be very bleak and dismal. Ethelbert, the head bartender of the Blue Note Cafe, is obviously not one of those unfortunates, for we find him in the morning.
Oh, what a beautiful... Hi, Walter.
Yeah, Ethelbert.
Bring up two more bottles of aspirin. They're going to be our best sellers today.
Okay.
Oh, what a beautiful... Well, look who's here. Happy New Year, Casey. And same to you, Miss Williams. What's the matter with you two?
Ask Walter to bring us a couple of cups of coffee, pal.
Strong and black.
Uh-oh.
And slip me an aspirin tablet.
Make that a double order.
Uh-huh. Hey, Walter, draw two.
Coming up. What's Herman Chittison doing here? Practicing at this hour in the morning?
He couldn't get home on account of the snow. He slept here all night.
Oh.
Here's some special headache medicine for you to stay out all night.
We haven't been stay out all night.
I know. Like good, sensible folks, you left the party early, just before daylight. And then you got all of an hour of sleep before you had to come to work on an 8 a.m. shift.
He's a wise guy, Annie.
Yeah.
You should have been like me. I wasn't on duty last night, but did I spend my leisure time in idle revelry? I did not. At 12 o'clock, my sister Edna and me wished one another a happy new year over a glass of good, healthful milk. Then I retired and enjoyed a fine, refreshing sleep. So, on this beautiful morning, you find me full of vim, vigor, and vitamins. Have another aspirin on the house.
Shall I kill this guy quickly, Annie? Listen, vim, vigor, and vitamins. The reason Miss Williams and I feel beat up is that ever since a few minutes after we reported for work this morning, we've been inhaling smoke.
Smoke?
There was another warehouse fire this morning near Chatham Circle.
That's the only New Year's party we've attended, and it was a red-hot one, too.
Bad fire, huh?
Yeah, plenty bad.
Oh, here's Walter with our coffee.
Oh, thanks, Walter. Happy New Year. Boy, is it welcome, too.
Thanks, Walter.
Okay.
Your papers kind of hinted that them warehouse fires lately have been arson jobs, Miss Williams.
Oh, we're morally certain of it, Ethelbert. And that Jake Schultz is the man behind them.
He and his mob make a deal with the owners of them places to split the fire insurance, huh?
That's right. That's the racket.
Skinny Jake Schultz is a pretty smart cookie, I hear. Neither the cops or the fire inspectors has ever got anything on him.
Yeah, well, if he's behind the torch job we just covered, he isn't so smart. as this one let somebody in for a hot seat rap.
What do you mean?
Well, the fire was set at night, and there was a human being in the building, an old watchman. That means arson in the first degree. The watchman got out all right, but a fireman was killed by falling timbers. And when death is caused through commission of first-degree arson, it becomes first-degree murder.
And a reliable witness says that he saw three men run out of the warehouse a few minutes before the fire was discovered. He's given the police a first-class description of them.
Was one of them Schultz?
No, of course not. Jake doesn't do any firebug stuff himself. If one of those three guys is caught and sings, it's going to be too bad for his boss, man. Annie, how about some more coffee?
Mm-mm, no, we don't have time, Casey.
That's
We've
right.
got to get out to Barstow College.
Well, there's no hurry about that.
Yes, there is. City Desk wants the dope on Professor Wendell right away.
Well, who's Professor Wendell and what's he doing?
Oh, he's a teacher at Barstow College. He went for a walk last night and he hasn't come back.
Now, the professor who shares an apartment with Wendell's just reported his disappearance to the Missing Persons Bureau.
Well, he thinks the guy has met with foul play?
That's right. Yeah. Well, if we must, we must, Annie. Come on, let's get started at Professor Gerber's place.
Well, this Professor Gerber's the one who reported the mysterious vanishing of this Professor Wendell,
That's
huh?
right. After we waste our time with him, Wendell will undoubtedly show up with a perfectly good reason for staying out all night.
Well, I'm perfectly willing to waste time on such cases today. I'd like to start the new year safely and sanely.
Me too, Annie, me too. To establish a precedent for 1948, no jams and no trouble, nothing but peace, sweetness, and light.
Instead of just a hope, why don't you two make that a New Year's resolution?
Well, that's a good idea, pal.
Oh, excellent. We here highly resolve
that for the coming year,
and starting now,
no jams,
no trouble,
nothing but peace, sweetness, and light.
Professor Wendell and I have shared this apartment for over 5 years, Miss Williams, ever since he lost his wife. I know him, and I'm certain he wouldn't stay out all night without notifying me if he was able to do so.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did you see him last, Professor Gerber?
He attended a New Year's party at the Teachers Club, a most decorous affair, I assure you. Shortly after toasting the arrival of the New Year with a glass of sherry, he left saying he was going to take a bus to Chatham Circle.
Chatham Circle?
He liked to wander around there.
Well, that's a tough neighborhood.
I know it, Mr. Casey, and I have repeatedly warned Professor Wendell to keep out of such neighborhoods, especially after dark. But to him, they were most interesting because of the criminal element he found there.
He was interested in the criminal element?
Very much so. Frankly, instead of the brilliant authority on ancient civilizations which Professor Wendell has been for many years, I am certain that he would rather have been a private detective.
Hmm. An amateur Sherlock Holmes.
He more particularly admired a fictional character called Dr. Thorndyke.
Casey, if he was snooping around Chatham Circle early this morning, he may have seen something he wasn't supposed to see.
Yeah, that warehouse fire was started early this morning, Annie.
A warehouse fire?
Look, will you give us a description of your friend, Professor Gerber?
Clarence Wendell is a small man, about 5'3", I should say,
yeah.
And he weighed not more than 130 pounds. He had light blue eyes, thin gray hair, and wears gold-rimmed spectacles. Last night, he wore a dark blue overcoat, black felt hat.
Casey.
Professor, did you give that description to the cops when you reported him missing?
Oh, of course. I gave them a photograph of Clarence.
And it didn't mean anything to them?
Mean anything?
Well, it exactly fits a witness description of one of three men who ran out of the Chatham Circle warehouse early this morning, just before it caught on fire.
I don't understand.
Well, the Missing Persons Bureau men who talked to Professor Gerber wouldn't necessarily know about that arson business, Annie.
Oh, no, that's right. It's being handled by the homicide squad.
Will you please explain?
Well, there's more important things to do first, Professor, if you don't mind. Where's your phone? I want to call Captain Logan of Homicide and get him to check with missing persons right away.
That's all you're going to do, Casey. Just phone. Remember our New Year's resolution.
Casey, I got hold of that warehouse witness right after you phoned me. When he looked at the photograph missing persons had of Professor Wendell, he identified it immediately.
Wendell was the little guy he saw coming out of the warehouse looking, right?
Yeah, between the two other men.
Uh-huh.
He hasn't been able to identify the others from pictures in our criminal files.
Damn it, the witness saw Wendell between the other guys?
Yeah. Now he recalls they both had a grip on the little man's arms.
Well, when Professor Wendell was playing detective last night, he accidentally stumbled onto the arsonist while they were setting the fire. And they kidnapped him to keep him quiet.
That's the way it looks, Miss Williams. Which doesn't help us find Wendell or the firebugs.
Well, like the fire inspectors, you think the Jake Schultz mob is behind
it? Sure, but suspicion and proof are very different things. We haven't a single lead to work on.
Professor Wendell's a definite lead.
He's a definite complication.
Huh?
If two of Schultz's torches put the snatch on him this morning because he caught him setting a fire, they probably bumped him off by now.
Logan, I don't think Professor Wendell has been bumped off.
Why?
Casey, the gang won't dare let him live if he saw what we think he did.
Oh, they'll give him the works eventually, Annie. But Jake Schultz is going to do a whole lot of thinking before he okays a murder that would hit the front pages and stay there. Logan, Jake's in the fire business, but he does his best to avoid strong heats.
Yeah. I'll have Skinny Jake and his mob brought in. We'll force information out of him.
Nah, you won't force anything out of Jake or his mob. That's been tried before.
Do you know of anything else we can try?
I can try something.
You?
Yeah.
What?
Something I'll have to keep to myself. There can't be any cops in the picture, Logan.
Meaning you know some crook who might be persuaded to spill?
Meaning you ask no questions and I answer none, now or later.
Okay. Help me find Professor Wendell alive, and you can write your own ticket.
Attaboy, Logan. Thank you. I'll get started right away. Now, stick around your office here, and I'll phone you after I make my contact.
I'll be near the phone.
So long.
Oh, I'm going with you. See you later, Captain.
Okay, Miss Williams. And carry your luckiest horseshoe, Casey.
Yeah, I guess I'll need it, pal.
Oh, what are you going to do, Casey?
Annie, I'm going to leave you as soon as we've reached the street door.
Not unless you tell me what this is all about.
Look, kid, I can't tell anybody.
Well, then I'll trail you.
Well, if you do, you may wreck the one chance of finding Professor Wendell alive.
Okay. Well, just tell me one thing, off the record. Where are you going?
Completely off the record, Annie. To Nick Morrow's tavern.
Well, the Schultz mob hangs out at Nick Morrow's. Jake Schultz owns the place.
Yeah?
Casey, you'll be sticking your neck out down there. Quite a few of the mob know you. Schultz knows you.
I'll be okay, Annie.
Well, maybe. Resolutions are so easily broken, Casey. We should only have hoped for a safe and sane 1948.
No, Red Monahan ain't in the back room, Casey. He ain't been in the joint at all today.
Well, I'll stick around, Nick. You'll probably be in later. Give me a beer, will you?
Okay.
Your bar do a big New Year's business last night, man?
I can't complain. You still running with the cops, Casey?
Why, Nick, I don't know what you mean. I'm a newspaper guy.
Sure, I know. Here's your beer.
Thanks, Nick.
What do you want to see Red Monahan about?
If it's any of your business, Nick, I want to thank him for the Christmas card he sent me.
You've been waiting here over an hour for me, Casey?
That's okay, Red. It's okay.
Oh, it ain't okay. You're one guy I wouldn't keep waiting for no reason.
Well, look, let's sit down here. Yeah? Over the corner table there, we can talk privately.
Yeah, okay. Hey, Nick, we're going to sit down. Bring me and my pal Casey a drink.
Okay, Red.
Come on, Casey. See, it's good to see you. Yeah, take a load off your feet.
Thanks.
Now, what's on your mind?
I'm going to ask a favor of you, Red.
A favor?
Yeah.
I owe you a debt, fella. One I can't ever pay. My only kid would be dead if it wasn't for you. See, I'll never forget how you pulled her out of the river when she was drowning.
Here's your drinks.
Oh, thanks, Nick.
That's all, Nick. Thanks.
Well, tell me, what can I do for you, Casey?
All right, I'll give it to you quick and straight, Red. I want Professor Weldon.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do. I know how close you are to Schultz. Nick, I give him a word that the cops don't know and won't know that I'm talking to you. All I want is that little professor, and I want him alive.
Look, I ain't got the slightest idea what you're driving at, pal. I swear I ain't.
You say you owe me a debt, Red. Under ordinary circumstances, that's a debt that only a heel would try to collect. But under these circumstances, I ask Wendell's life in exchange for your kids.
I can't give it to you.
Because he's been killed?
No, he ain't been killed. I tell you, I don't know anything about him.
You can't lie to me, Red. Look,
You're a crook, but you're not a murderer. If you don't tell me where to find Professor Wendell, you'll be committing murder right now, just as surely as though you held a gun to the guy's head.
I ain't even seen the guy, Casey. I won't see him.
You know what I mean. Keep your nose clean, fella.
I ain't no squeal. I don't rat.
You're ratting on a debt. You owe me a life.
Okay, Casey, you win. I'm coming clean with you. But I had no part in anything that happened this morning.
Where is the professor?
He's being kept in an old house out in Bristol Road. While Schultz makes up his mind when and how to pump him off.
Where on Bristol Road?
East of Old Turnpike. Third farmhouse on the right-hand side.
Third farmhouse on the right, yeah.
Yeah, now get out of here, Casey. It's curtains for me if the mob finds out that I told you.
Nobody will ever find it out from me, Red. Thanks a million and so long.
So,
what's the matter?
Schultz. Skinny Jake. Just came out of the back room with two guys at the mob.
Yeah.
Hello, Red.
Hi, Jake. Hi, Maury. How's Trick, Sam?
Yeah.
Hi.
Casey. I haven't seen you for a long time.
Well, I haven't been around your way, Schultz.
Well, Nick phoned me a while ago that you were waiting here for our pal Red. Knowing how he feels about you on account of his kid, I decided to come over.
You, come in the back way?
Uh-huh. I've been sitting in the back room, listening through the wall.
Listening? You heard?
Yeah, plenty. Walk into that back room, both of you. Keep your hands in sight. Get going.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you've got a car in the alley and you two dopes are getting into it.
Oh, what are you going to do to us, Jake?
You can guess, can't you, Red?
Yeah. And I ain't gonna take it.
That goes for me, too, Red. I can clean these mugs up.
Don't shoot, guys. It might bring the cops.
Hey, this Casey's getting my cap, though.
No, he isn't.
You got him with your blackjack.
Yeah, Casey's out of the picture now, Red.
Yeah, I got right on the control seat. Let's stop him anyway.
I'm doing just that.
Now, they're both out cold.
Yeah, but not cold enough. You and Murray put him in the car, Sam, and we'll all go for a ride. There's a good spot, Sam. Stop the car.
Okay, boss.
Well, Red, this is the end of the ride for you and Casey.
Hey, they can't hear you, Jake.
Huh?
When you sock the back of Nick's joint, you've done an A1 job.
They're still out, eh?
And how?
All right, pull them out of the car and roll them into the ditch here.
Yeah. Give me a hand, Sam.
Hey, Maury. Come on.
All right, got him.
All right, now get back in the driver's seat, Sam. You, Maury, give him each a slug through the head.
Me?
Yes, you heard me.
Hey, you're afraid of killing, ain't you, Jake?
Oh, I'm not afraid of it. I've just been smart enough to keep myself and you guys clear of it. Now we've got no choice.
But you want someone else to do it.
Well, do it if you haven't got the guts. Get back in the car.
Yeah, that suits me fine. Hey, why are you getting in, too?
I'll shoot from here. Sam, be ready to step on the gas when I do. This isn't a private road.
I'll be ready. I got the bus in gear and my foot on the clutch.
Let them guys in the ditch have it, Jake.
All right, I'm letting them have it.
Hey, a car's coming, boss.
Huh?
From behind us.
I see it. Get away, Sam.
You only saw one guy, Jake.
I can't do any more shooting now. Get away from that car behind us, Sam. Get away!
Well, you certainly had that lucky horseshoe with you, Casey. He found Red Monahan lying beside you in the ditch with a bullet through his chest. And you, only had an egg-sized lump on the back of your head.
Oh, Casey didn't get off so easy, Captain Logan. He was unconscious for almost 2 hours after he was brought to this hospital.
Well, the doc says he's all right now, Miss Williams.
Yeah, it's all right, honey. I'm okay. Don't worry.
Oh, Casey, I've been so worried. Oh,
forget it, kid. They killed poor Red.
No. Oh, he's going to pull through. Slug didn't get him in a vital spot.
Oh, I'm glad of that. I'm glad. No, Red's more than a half-right guy. Much more. Of course, you want to know what happened, Logan.
Take it easy, pal. You were delirious for a while after they brought you here, and you did a lot of talking.
You kept saying that Red Monahan had told you that Professor Wendell was being held prisoner in a house on Bristol Road.
East of Old Turnpike, third farmhouse on the right.
Wait a
minute. I said all that when I was out.
Mm-hmm. Over and over.
Well, then you went to Bristol Road and found the professor.
Well, my guys went there, pal, but too late.
Schultz and the men with him evidently knew they hadn't killed you, Casey.
They lost no time in taking Professor Wendell away. We found the house empty. We haven't any idea where they've taken him.
Well, you found a possible lead in that Bristol Road farmhouse, Captain. Go ahead and show Casey.
Lead?
That thing's no lead, Miss Williams. It merely proves that Professor Wendell was in the house.
What'd you find, Luke?
He found a belt.
A belt?
Mm-hmm. With Professor Wendell's initials on the buckle.
Now, take a look, pal. Miss Williams insists that these cuts in the edges of the belt mean something.
Well, they're fresh cuts, Casey. See?
Yeah.
When we found the belt in a room where Wendell was probably held prisoner, we figured that those cuts might be some sort of a tip-off about where he'd been taken from there. It hasn't worked out that way.
They're funny cuts, aren't they? Some straight, some slanting, and irregularly spaced.
Yeah. Wendell knew that an ordinary written message wouldn't help him. The men guarding him would have found it and destroyed it. Well, I'm sure these cuts are a message in code.
Our cipher expert at headquarters didn't recognize it as any code.
Well, your chief cipher experts were taking New Year's Day off, Captain. The men on duty are apprentices.
Yeah.
Do the cuts mean anything to you, Casey?
No, not a thing.
It makes it unanimous. They're Greek as far as all of us are concerned.
Greek. Greek. Hey, Annie. Wait a minute. Professor Gerbel told us that Wendell was an authority on ancient civilizations. Have you shown this belt to Gerber or whatever his name is, Logan?
No, but I phoned him.
All right, we're going to show it to him right now.
Casey! Yeah. Casey, you can't get out of bed.
I'm out. Beat it, Annie. Come on, let me get dressed. I want to hear what Professor Gerber says when he sees this cut-up belt.
All right, I'm going.
You're right, Mr. Casey. The belt conveys a message.
It does, Professor Gerber?
Yes. In the oldest secret code that history records, the ancient Spartans used it to convey secret military information. It is called Sitili. Professor Wendell hoped you'd bring this to me, Captain Logan.
He did, eh?
He must have. He knew I'd be able to read a Sitili message.
Why are you wrapping that belt around your arm?
So that I may be able to decipher its markings, Miss Williams. You see, to write a Sitili message, the ancients wrapped a strip of papyrus, long and narrow, like this belt, around a staff of predetermined circumference. Spirally, with the edge of each spiral joining that of another. Then on the joining edges, they wrote the secret information they wished to impart. When the strip was unwound from the staff, nothing but apparently idle markings were visible on its edges. Now, the belt is completely wound about my arm. See? Its message is plain.
Not to me. All I see is that the edges of the cuts meet.
But the cuts form letters, Captain.
Greek letters.
They're Greek, Logan. Anne knows she's been to college.
What do they say?
In rough translation, they are taking me to Diana's house.
Diana's house?
Diana was the Roman name for the Greek goddess Artemis.
Say, I'm not a shark on the classics, but I get it.
So do I, Logan.
Well, I don't.
Neither do I.
Professor Gerber, Annie. The name of Skinny Jake Schultz's best gal friend is Diana. And to get away from the classics entirely, it's Diana McGillicuddy.
I never thought Schultz would take Wendell to such an obvious hideout, Casey.
Neither did I, Logan, which means Schultz has been smarter than we are. Well, all right, let's go.
All set, Captain Logan. We have the joint surrounded.
The men are ready to break in from all sides, Sergeant?
As soon as they hear your whistle, sir.
They'll hear that as soon as I get to the front door. Now, you stay there, Casey.
Oh, no. I got a little personal matter to settle with Skinny Jake Schultz. I got a hunch he's in Diana's house.
You should still be in the hospital, you Sam.
All right, but I'm not. Okay, blow your whistle, pal.
I haven't got time to argue with you. It's the day, guys!
Coming in from all sides.
Pick him up. That means you, Schultz.
Oh, no, you're not going to take me.
You're wrong, Jake.
Casey.
I owed him that KO, Logan. And I owe these other two mugs something, too.
No.
We've given up.
Now, lay off, Casey.
Let me go, Logan. Let me go.
Cut it. This is a police job. You can take the pictures, but you can't make them.
Well, all right, Logan. But I want good shots. With Professor Wendell in them.
Where is Wendell, you bugs?
He ain't been hurt.
He's down in the cellar.
Yeah. Sergeant, bring him up.
I'll get my camera set.
You can't take pictures of the professor for the newspaper.
Hey, not for decent newspapers.
Why not, you mugs?
Oh, on account of...
Because, the professor lost the belt that kept his pants up.
Yeah, and then some way, he lost his pants.
Them pictures you took of Professor Wendell after he was rescued was very different, Casey. It's the first time I ever saw pictures of a college professor wrapped in a blanket. He looked just like an Indian.
Professor Wendell didn't like to have him taken that way, Ethelbert, even though Casey was responsible for his rescue. He was kind of burned up.
Yeah, he wasn't as burned up as Jake Schultz and his hired firebugs are going to be.
No, they're facing murder and kidnapping charges. And with plenty of evidence to back them up.
Yeah, as the result of Casey busting some nice New Year's resolutions, Miss Williams.
A safe and sane 1948.
You've started swell. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Annie.
Let's enlarge the idea. And no kidding.
You've got something there, Ethelbert. All right, all together.
Happy New Year to everyone. Excuse me.
Crime Photographer, starring Stotts Cotsworth as Casey, is brought to you each Thursday by the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation.
Casey, Crime Photographer, on Tuned to Yesterday from New Year's Day 1948 on CBS. The program was heard on Thursday evenings, and in that calendar year just happened to fall directly on the holidays. Rather than taking off, they did holiday-themed shows, like the one we just heard, The Hot New Year's Party, and the week before on Christmas Day was the story The Santa Claus of Bum Boulevard. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Boston Blackie, an ABC syndicated recording from November 29th, 1945.
Catch up.
I hope so, or Simmons might think he needs a new foreman.
Here comes concrete, Bill.
Come on, fellas, rake that stuff down. Let's get some action here.
Some view down there, Bill.
Some drop, too.
Oh, did you have to mention that?
Look, Joe, just watch your step up here, and you can live forever on jobs like these.
Yeah, but who wants to live forever?
Well, there you go.
Hey, Bill, what the... Tom, Mike, somebody come up here quick. Yeah. Bell's collapsed.
What's the matter with him, Joe? Altitude getting?
I don't know. Just fell down like an empty sack. You better give me a hand with him.
Yeah, sure.
Signal for the elevator to come up empty. Big thing, Bill.
Well, what's the matter?
Look, there's a bullet hole in him.
A bullet hole? Bill shot up here on the 20th floor, you crazy.
I wish I was, Tom, because Bill's dead.
Faraday, you have to do something about these parking tickets.
Look, John, you've been telling me that for 15 minutes. And for 15 minutes, I've told you there's nothing I can do. Now, we might as well talk about something else.
Well, let's talk about Boston Blackie. I'm on my way up to see him. He's sick, you know.
Look, let's leave Blackie out of this.
What's the matter, Inspector? Don't you and Blackie get along?
What I think of Blackie is my own business. And nothing's the matter as long as he can't get out of bed.
Now, you know you miss him.
Yeah, like I'd miss a toothache. But let's not talk about him.
Good. Let's get back to those parking tickets of mine.
Oh, no.
As I said before, I'm the contractor on that building going up at 1021 50th Street.
Yeah, I know, but there's...
The police say my trucks are blocking traffic.
I know. I can't do anything about it.
Look, Faraday, that's a big construction job, 36 stories. My trucks have to park in the street while they're waiting to unload.
John, there's nothing I can do.
Look, you're a police officer. Can't you handle ordinary parking tickets?
A little while ago, you were talking about Blackie. Now you're talking like him. You know, maybe I'd better suddenly get busy.
Really, Faraday, isn't there something you can do?
Your trucks are parking illegally, John, and that's that... Excuse me. Hello, Faraday speaking.
Inspector,
A call just came in from 50th Street. Foreman for the Simmons Construction Company was shot to death 5 minutes ago.
What?
Yeah, while he was up on the 20th floor laying concrete. Nobody knows where the shot came from.
Well, what's the address?
Don't know where the guy got killed. 1021 50th Street.
Thanks. Get me a squad car, will you?
Yeah, you bet.
What's the matter, Inspector?
Maybe I'm going to work for you after all, John, but not on those parking tickets. You've just had a murder in your company.
What?
A murder. One of the foremen on that building you're putting up was just shot to death.
Oh, no.
No, he says. Yes. Now, don't get too upset about it. Murder's my business. I solve them every day. Come along, and I'll show you how I do it.
I certainly will.
Oh, you were going to see Blackie, weren't you?
Yes, but I think that had better wait.
This won't hold you up long. Come on down to your building with me, and then we'll go up and see Blackie. Pull yourself together.
One of my foremen murdered. It'll take time for me to get over this.
Cheer up, John. It's your foreman who's dead, and he'll never get over it.
How's Blackie doing in there, Shorty?
Shh, Miss Wesley, he's asleep.
Oh. Good, something.
Yeah. The way he can't talk, that's what I call something.
Oh, laryngitis doesn't last. He'll get his voice back before long.
Gee, I sure hope so, Miss Wesley. Because unless you're here with Blackie, too, I ain't got nobody to talk to.
Oh, that's probably the doctor. Come in.
Hello, Miss Wesley.
Well, Inspector Faraday.
You know John Simmons, don't you? Don't you, Miss Wesley?
Oh, yes, of course. We met several months ago. I'm glad to see you again.
You're looking as lovely as ever, Miss Wesley.
Well, I'll have to see a photograph of ever before I'm sure I like that.
I ain't nobody glad to see me.
Oh, Shorty.
Oh, as long as Blackie isn't with you, I'm always glad to see you, Shorty. You know Mr. Simmons, don't you?
Any guy who knows Blackie, I know, too. Hiya, Mr. Simmons.
A little puzzled at the moment, Shorty.
Look, John, will you believe me? It's as simple a murder case as I've ever worked on.
Oh, you must mean the murder of the foreman on that 50th Street building.
How do you know about that?
Well, you heard it on the radio.
My company is constructing that building. That's why I'm so upset.
Look, John, let me worry about that murder. And let's not talk about it anymore. Come on, let's go in and see the invalid.
Well, just a minute. Mr. Simmons can go in to see Blackie, but I don't think you ought to, Inspector.
All I want to do is cheer him up, Miss Wesley. You know me.
I know Blackie, too. One look at you, and he'll probably strain his vocal cord trying to outshout you.
What's the matter with him, Miss Wesley?
Caught a very bad cold last week, and he still can't use his voice.
Well, that's what I've been waiting for. Come on, John, let's go.
All right, Inspector Faraday, you may both see him, but only for a few minutes now, mind you. I'll wake him up for you.
Imagine, for once he won't talk back to me.
Oh, he's awake already. Blackie, the inspector, and John Simmons are here to see you. Come on in, gentlemen, please.
Hello, Blackie. You certainly look fine.
Oh, John. Glad to see you.
Don't let him kid you, Blackie. You look awfully sick to me.
It's looking at you that's made me sick, Faraday.
You know, I think you better go to a hospital, Blackie. Even your jokes need a doctor.
Darling,
please don't talk.
No, just listen. You'll be surprised how much you'll learn.
There's been a murder at the building I'm putting up on 50th Street, Blackie. Wish you were out of bed to work on it.
If he gets out of bed and meddles in this murder case, I'll work on him. That's the simplest kind of killing. I know the killer already. The guy's wife. It's got to be her.
The killer could be anybody, even you, John.
Let's hope not.
Aren't you a wise guy, Blackie? John here couldn't be the killer. He was in my office when the foreman was shot.
Excuse me, Inspector, but if you found out where the shot came from...
Well, you don't have to be excused for that question, Miss Wesley. The shot was fired from one of the high buildings in the neighborhood, and we'll probably never know which one.
Same goes for all your suspects, Faraday.
That voice of yours sounds awfully silly, Blackie.
Does it? Wait till you see how you look when you can't find your killer.
Miss Woods, I'm sorry to come to your home at a time like this, but your husband has been murdered. And it's my job to find out who killed him.
I understand, Inspector Faraday, but I don't know what I can do to help.
You can tell me who might have killed your husband.
But I don't know.
Look, Mrs. Woods, a guy doesn't get shot for no reason. If But I can't find a reason.
There can't be any reason.
But there has to be. What did your husband do wrong?
Nothing.
You're telling me. I checked into his background. He was the most popular foreman on the job. He was a leader of his lodge. He was the best-liked guy in this neighborhood. What's more, he didn't have an enemy in the world.
Everybody liked him, Inspector.
Somebody didn't.
How could anyone ever dislike him? He never did anything wrong.
What kind of a husband was he?
A perfect one.
Seems to have been a perfect everything, including a perfect target.
Please, Inspector, I can't talk about this any longer.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Woods, but this simple murder is getting complicated. And I'm getting nowhere.
I'm sorry.
Look, Mrs. Woods, now, about your husband's family. Was there any trouble there? Jealousy or something like that,
Bill was awfully good to his family. He gave them everything he could.
Well, maybe that's a clue.
What do you mean?
Maybe he gave his family too much, and you too little. And you might be the one who killed him. Did that hit home, Mrs. Wood?
No.
And he was shot by a half-powered rifle from a long distance. Only you could know what he was wearing and exactly where he'd be and be able to spot him from far away.
That's not so.
I don't expect you to agree with me, Mrs. Woods. But I tell you something you can't expect.
Yes?
A complete investigation of what you were doing at the time your husband was killed.
I was sleeping.
Oh, so you were sleeping then, huh? Maybe you're going to have to prove that, Mrs. Woods. Because I'm wide awake now.
Shall I keep on reading, Blackie?
Yes, Mary. Go ahead.
All right. According to this newspaper, police say it is impossible to tell from which building the shot was fired, because Wood's fellow workmen can't agree in what position the dead man was standing when he was hit. But police, nevertheless, are searching all high buildings in the area in hopes of finding some clue.
Does it say what kind of a gun he was killed with?
Yeah, a high-powered rifle with probably a telescopic sight. He was shot through the heart.
Any motive?
No. No, according to this paper here, police have no idea why he was killed. He had no family troubles, no financial troubles, and his standing in the community was perfect. What are you writing, darling?
Something I want you to tell Faraday. Get him on the phone, huh?
Of course.
Here you are, Mary. Read this to Faraday slowly.
All right. Blackie, do you mean what you say in this note?
Afraid I do.
Oh.
Hello? Faraday speaking.
Oh, Inspector, this is Mary Wesley.
Look, don't bother me. I'm busy.
But I have an important message for you from Blackie.
I'm not interested.
Well, you should be. It's about Bill Wood's murder.
What does Blackie know about that?
Only this. That another workman is going to be killed in the same place and in the same way.
Jack, except I wish they'd get that west floodlight on. Those lights are making crazy shadows without it.
I'll send a man down to see if something can't be done. Don't let the shadows get you, Tom.
Yeah, but I was thinking, this is the exact spot where Bill Woods, the day foreman, got shot today.
I'm the night foreman, so what?
But doesn't it bother you?
Ah, forget it.
Hey, you guys, come on over here with those forms. Concrete's coming.
Doesn't it give you a funny feeling up here?
I'm going to have a heck of a feeling in the morning if the boss asks me why we haven't finished this 20th floor. Come on, let's get this concrete done.
Come on, you guys! Hurry with those floors!
Concrete's just come up on the elevator, Jack.
Good, get those guys over with it fast. Rich.
Hey, Jack, what's the... Holy mackerel! He's dead!
Mary Wesley and Shorty are in Blackie's apartment when Faraday and John Simmons, employer of the two dead men, break into Blackie's bedroom.
Blackie, I want to talk to you.
So do I, Blackie. You know something about these killings.
Please, gentlemen. Blackie's sick.
He's going to be a lot sicker when I get through with him.
Blackie, how did you know Jack Barnes was going to be killed?
I didn't know, John. It's just a guess.
You know something, Blackie. Now, who told you?
Yes, I tell you.
Well, you tell me a lot of things that aren't true.
Blackie, how did you know the second foreman would be killed? Well, this is serious. Two of my men have been murdered.
You think you have a serious problem, John. What about me? I have two murders to solve and no suspect. I know both Bill Woods and Jack Barnes were killed by the same person.
How do you know that, Inspector Faraday?
I know it, Miss Wesley, because they were both killed by the same gun.
And you have no idea why they were killed?
If I know why they were killed, I might have a clue to their killer.
You know, what surprises us is that you don't think it's Blackie.
I'm beginning to wonder about him, I'll tell you that. It'd be just like Blackie to get out of bed and kill Jack Barnes just to make your guess come true.
Not this week, Faraday. Blackie is not in the mood for murder.
Hey, Blackie, what are you writing?
Maybe it's my will.
I couldn't have that much luck.
The paper said there was no reason why Bill Wood should have been killed, Inspector Faraday. What about Jack Barnes?
Same thing. He was just as well-liked as Woods, if not better. You know, there's always a reason for a guy getting killed. But this time I have two guys and no reasons.
Well, who have you talked to?
Everybody, including Bill Woods' wife. Hey, what are you writing, Blackie?
Just a letter.
Inspector, what was Bill Woods' wife like?
A nice-looking girl. In fact, I'd say she was beautiful. I thought for a while maybe she killed her husband. But I haven't found anything to prove it.
Well, if she killed her husband, why would she have killed Jack Barnes?
I didn't say she killed Jack Barnes.
But you said the same person killed them both.
Huh?
That's right, Faraday. You did say that. Because they were both killed in the same way and by the same gun.
Hey, wait a minute. Mrs. Woods has no alibi. Nobody saw her at the time of her husband's death. She says she was sleeping. Blackie, will you stop writing? I didn't think you would.
You were talking about Mrs. Woods?
Oh, yeah. Maybe Mr. and Mrs. Woods didn't get along. She could have killed him for that. And maybe she killed Jack Barnes because Jack knew she was the one who killed her husband. Hey, I'll see you later.
Where are you going, Inspector?
To see Mrs. Woods. Maybe she'll claim she was sleeping again when Jack Barnes was killed at 8 o'clock last night. Why don't you knock off a little sleep yourself, Blackie? Judging by your jokes, you need it.
You!
Blackie, will you do me a favor? Solve these two murders for me. Not only because the killer ought to be caught, but, well, men on the building are beginning to get restless.
I can understand that.
I'll try, John.
Thanks, Blackie. I'd appreciate it. Let me know if I can help you in any way. I'll be at home.
I'll take you to the door, Mr. Simmons.
Thanks, no, Miss Wesley. I can find my way out. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
I'll be grateful for any help you can give me, Blackie. Goodbye.
Mary. Where's Shorty?
In the other room. I'll call him. Shorty!
I have a little job for him.
Shorty! Oh, well, darling, why not let me do it?
I'll need you here.
Okay.
You want me, Miss Wesley?
Yes, I do.
Well, what do you want?
Blackie wants you to do something for him.
Oh, sure, Blackie. Anything you say.
Look, short one. Faraday's having trouble with these murders.
Hey, you want me to solve them, boss? Huh?
Indirectly. I've written out a few instructions. All you've got to do is follow them.
Is this the East Wing, nurse?
Yes, sir, it is.
I'm Inspector Faraday of the police. I'd like to see Mrs. Bill Woods.
She's sleeping now, Inspector, but of course, if it's important, I'll waken her.
Now, wait a minute. When was she admitted to the hospital?
About 6 o'clock yesterday evening, according to our record, Inspector.
6 o'clock.
It's right here on my desk. I'll get it for you.
She was admitted early last night. She couldn't have killed the second fool.
What'd you say?
Huh? Oh, nothing.
Well, here you are, Inspector Faraday. Mrs. Wood's record.
Admitted at 6:15. Nervous prostration.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to take a look in Mrs. Woods' room. That woman in there might not be Mrs. Woods.
You policemen think of everything, don't you?
Well, we have to, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, here's a room. I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't have to wake me.
Oh, I won't.
Well?
Yeah, you can close the door again, miss.
Well, is that Mrs. Woods?
I'm afraid it is.
Afraid, Inspector? Why?
I'm afraid Boston Blackie is going to stay in bed and find the answer to this before I do.
Oh, maybe that's Shorty reporting, Blackie. I'll get it. Hello?
Miss Wesley, this is Shorty.
Oh, yes, Shorty. Have you finished?
Yeah, I done everything Blackie said.
Just a minute. He's finished with your instructions, Blackie.
Good. Have him tell you what he found out. Only hold the phone so I can hear him, too.
Right. Shorty.
Yeah?
Blackie is listening to this, too. So tell him what you found out.
Okay. First, I went to Bill Woods' house, see? His wife wasn't there. She went to the hospital just after the inspector talked to her.
Yes?
There wasn't nothing wrong with Bill Woods. It was okay, just like Faraday said.
What about Jack Barnes, the second foreman?
Well, I'd say he was even more okay than Bill Woods. I talked to his wife. Boy, was she a beautiful tomato. Real slickeroo.
Never mind that, Shorty. What about Jack Barnes himself?
Oh, he was solid, Miss Wesley. Swallow his wife, great to his kids. Had a real ritzy house. All done up slick inside. Yeah, he was an okay guy in the neighborhood.
What else?
Well, that's about all, I guess.
Well, thanks, sure. Oh, wait a minute. Blackie has written something he wants you to do. Now, just a minute. Here we are. He needs a photograph of Jack Barnes' house.
What for?
I don't know what for. But do it just the same, will you?
Oh, sure, I'll do it. But it sure is crazy.
Don't worry about it, Shorty. Maybe Blackie thinks a photograph is about the only thing this investigation will develop.
Well, if you won't tell me why you want this photograph, Blackie, will you at least tell me why you want these two hunks of concrete?
I want to look at them, Shorty.
Oh, Blackie, you're getting sand all over your blanket.
Maybe those two foremen were killed because of the sand in these pieces of concrete.
You're joking.
I'm guessing. But the sand in this piece looks different than the sand in the other.
Oh, and maybe one isn't as good, huh? Well, maybe an inferior grade of sand could be a motive for this murder.
Right. Shorty.
Yeah, boss.
Take these pieces of concrete to a laboratory and have them analyzed.
Oh, sure, boss. Right away.
Aunt Mary.
Yeah?
Call Faraday and John Simmons. Ask them to come up here.
You never fail, do you, Blackie? Even flat on your back, you're going to put Inspector Faraday back on his feet.
Man, I wish I knew what...
All right, Blackie.
I don't know what...
Everybody is here and waiting.
No, I don't.
Now, are you going to tell me who killed those two men?
You're going to tell us, Mary.
I am.
You're going to read the answer as soon as I get through writing it.
Oh.
Nobody knows the answer, Blackie, because so far there isn't one.
Well, Inspector Faraday, maybe you're right about Mrs. Woods.
The same person killed both Woods and Barnes. And Mrs. Woods was in the hospital when Barnes was shot. Hey, what's this photograph?
It's a picture of Jack Barnes' home.
What's it doing here?
I've been trying to find that out ever since Shorty brought it to us.
Here's the answer to everything, Mary. Read it and watch Faraday weep.
Blackie, you're just wasting your strength and my time.
Ignore the inspector and read those notes, Mary.
Everybody ready?
Yes.
Yeah, we're ready.
All right. Here's what Blackie's written. Quote, there are three people involved in this crime. A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just a minute. A was the first to die, killed by B. B died next. At the hands of C.
I tell you, the same person killed both A and B.
Well, now, here's what Blackie writes about that, Inspector.
What?
Both persons were killed in the same way by the same gun, but not by the same killer. In this case, two killers used the same gun.
All right, that's possible. But what about motives?
Wait a minute. Here is the motive paragraph, Inspector. A, Bill Woods, was killed by B, Jack Barnes.
Huh?
Now, let me finish. Because Woods told Barnes he thought the grade of concrete used in the building was inferior. Barnes knew it was, went to see, and received instructions to get rid of Woods. He got rid of him by killing him.
Yeah. I can check on that concrete.
It's already checked. Here's the lab report Shorty got.
You're trying to do my job for me, huh, Blackie?
He's done it, Inspector. Listen to this. After Barnes killed Woods, he went to see and demanded more money to keep quiet about the inferior concrete.
But if
you... So C killed Barnes. In other words, there were two different killers, but the motive for each murder was the same.
Now, I've read nursery rhymes that solved a crime better than this. Who's this guy C, or is a guy named D going to kill him?
Hold your breath, Inspector. C is in this room, sitting in the chair beside you.
Huh?
C is the boy, John Simmons.
I've heard just about enough of this comedy. Haven't you, Inspector?
Yeah, I certainly have, John.
Wait a minute, please.
I suppose there's more to that note of Blackie.
There is. Shorty?
Yes?
Shorty, tell Inspector Faraday what you found in John Simmons' house.
Oh, sure, Miss Wesley. It was the Moiter gun. A high-powered automatic rifle, see, with a telescope sight. Fired twice.
Satisfied, Inspector?
No, not until I see it.
Sure, Inspector, I'll go get it.
Inspector Faraday, grab Mr. Simmons. He's trying to get away.
I'll grab him.
Let go of me. Let go.
I'll let go of you after I let go of this.
Now get up. Come on, up.
All right.
If you want to talk, John, it may go a lot easier on you.
Why should I talk? You know about the concrete. You have the gun. You don't have to know anymore.
Yeah. I know you were lucky enough to be in my office with a story about traffic tickets at the time Woods was killed.
That wasn't luck, Inspector. That was because he knew when Barnes was going to kill Woods. He planned to be in your office at that time.
I can figure this out from here, Miss Wesley. Come on, John. Why did you kill Barnes?
Oh, the answer to that is easy, too, Inspector. Mr. Simmons was being blackmailed by...
Quiet,
Barnes.
Miss Wesley. Come on, John, you better talk. How did you get the gun that killed the first foreman?
Oh, I know that one, too. Barnes gave it to him to hide.
Hey, look. Where are you getting all these answers?
Blackie wrote them out for me. And here's the last one. Simmons thought it would mislead police if both men were killed in the same manner.
Yeah, you certainly misled us plenty, John. But there's nothing misleading about your going to jail. Hey, where's Shorty with that murder gun?
You tell him, Mary.
Well, you have a confession now, so I can tell you, Inspector. We were, just guessing about that gun. But we know now. You'll find it in Mr. Simmons' house.
Well, concrete caused two murders. I guess that's that.
Oh, wait a minute. Blackie's writing something more. Here, I'll take it, darling.
What does it say?
It says... Faraday, this is one time a murderer will be convicted on concrete evidence.
Boston Blackie, on Tune to Yesterday from the 29th of November 1945 from ABC. And so closes this hour of mystery on Tune to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.